Taking the knee is something that the American gridiron football player Colin Kaepernick introduced, and it got him into a lot of trouble. It basically lost him any chance of an NFL career. There has subsequently been an secret settlement, which has given him some money and some prospect of a future. But up until very recently, taking the knee in sport has been restricted to the NFL, and it hasn't been huge even in the NFL. It's now ever present in the English Premier League, and I must admit that I still think it's an incredibly impressive sight to see 22 footballers and lines people and managers at the side taking the knee. And it made an appearance at the first Formula One race of the season in Austria this past weekend, where all but 14 of the drivers took the knee. All of them except Lewis Hamilton wearing a T-shirt that said End Racism. Lewis Hamilton's T-shirt said Black Lives Matter. And how much does this matter? How much prospect does this have of changing the situation of racism in sport and racism more broadly in society? Simnikiwe Qabanisa is a sports writer on the line to us now. What do you think, Simnikiwe? Does it impress you, or do you turn away from it? Ha! Gesture.
Look, I mean, I think it is. I think it is very impressive because, look, I mean, you know, when you talk about gauging whether it has an effect or not, whether it's going to make sort of tangible change or not, I'm not sure any of us can actually sort of, you know, be able to gauge it. And that's not really the point. The point is the acknowledgement, I think. For me, the point is the acknowledgement. And secondly, what I really like to see is athletes, people who can sometimes live in a bubble where they feel, real life sort of day-to-day stuff, you know, like racism, like bigotry, like sexism, you know, doesn't really filter into their world. I like the fact that they're the ones doing it. So, you have to ask if you're going to ask yourself if it's going to make a tangible difference or not. The bigger question for me is, you know, would the alternative not to be, you know, be not to do anything?
Yeah, so I mean, Troy Deeney has been one of the black footballers in the EPL who's been most outspoken about this, and he has said he's worried that it just becomes another T-shirt which you wear for a while and then put at the back of your cupboard, and nothing really has changed. And as one of the two drivers who chose not to take the knee and who explained that decision, Leclerc of Ferrari, said it's not about taking the knee, it's about what you do all day, every day in your daily life. And, yeah, I mean, is there a point at which it just becomes a kind of meaningless gesture again, that it's lost its power to make you think about the subject? Because when Lewis Hamilton, who's been a Formula One world champion 5 times on his way to his 6th, or is it 6 on his way to 7, when he speaks about experiencing racism, I think it must make you stop and think a bit.
Yeah, it does. I think those 2 points from Troy Deeney and Charles Leclerc are very valid points of view, in that it does run the risk of just becoming another T-shirt slogan. And by the same token, what really matters is what we do on a daily basis. But the thing is, I mean, I can't sort of discredit the movement. The problem with, you know, again, with bigotry, sexism, racism, stuff like that, is what we do is we sit and we wait for flashpoints to sort of engage it. So if guys are doing it on a daily basis, it doesn't matter how, you know, sickening or sort of automatic it becomes after a while. It's the kind of thing that should be sort of in our faces, and it should be front and center at all times, because I think what we do is we kind of, you know, we have a flashpoint and we talk to that flashpoint, and when we're done talking to that flashpoint, we forget it as if it doesn't exist again. We put it back on the shelf until the next time. And so, I get the 2 points of views. I just found it funny in F1 that, you know, the guys who basically, you know, didn't want to take the knee, you know, for sort of for optics, you know, how the optics would look, ended up in a way looking like, you know, they endorse racism. It's probably not the, you know, it's probably not the case, but, you know, it's become very much an optics thing. And you just hope that, you know, you just hope that a lot of people are taking it to heart. I can assure you, I'm pretty sure a lot of the people that are kneeling, some of them are pretty racist or bigoted or sexist, you know what I mean?
So, I mean, you know, it's, and I know that a lot of my listeners are going to think I'm being ridiculous with this, but I've been watching a lot of English football, and something that I noticed a while ago, and then I started to take notes of it. When there is a white analyst and a black analyst in the studio with one of the hosts of the pre-match and the, you know, the halftime programs and so on, in all but two cases, over 40 breaks, so the water break when there's chat before the game, the water break during the halftime, the water break in the second half and afterwards, only on two occasions out of 40 did the black analyst speak first, and that was Ian Wright. Every single other time, the white analyst had the first say. Now, you know, people are going to hear that and say, come on, John, what are you, that's ridiculous. But I don't think it is. I think it reflects something quite deep.
Yeah, look, I haven't watched it that closely. And secondly, I hadn't actually noticed what you're saying. But you know, by the same token, maybe it is sort of poor running off of, you know, sort of facilitating off the program to let you know the one person speak more than the other. Or I mean, we had a similar situation
with Nick Mallett and the Super Sports,
and it literally came down to who spoke the most or who spoke first, and you know who's those things are very valid. You know, I'm in the media profession. Racism affects me. You know, when I first walked into a press box, 20 years ago, you know, my colleagues, you know, openly laughed because they'd never seen, you know, a young black guy, dreadlocks, new glasses in a press box before. And they openly laughed. And look, I mean, I'll happily admit that I look like an extra from Cool Runnings. And I probably wrote rugby a bit like an extra from Cool Runnings. But, you know, it's, you know, for a kid who's not sure of himself, that can be quite difficult. In, you know, in all fairness to them, we're the best of mates now, and these guys have protected me, you know, against sort of racial incidents, you know, subsequently. So what I'm saying is it is everywhere, and we all need to kind of like watch how we interact with things. I've written rugby for 20 years, but I still sometimes, and I'm probably being unfair, but I notice it, you know, every time a young sort of Afrikaans kid comes in, you know, people are more willing to sort of assume that he understands and knows the game better than I do, despite my experience. And when you look at the guys who have similar experience that are, you know, sort of my white counterparts, you know, there's an assumption that, you know, they're the guys who know what's going on. You know, it's quite difficult constantly having to prove yourself. And so I think, you know, it's the kind of thing we need to watch, you know, pretty much everywhere we are. You know, racism doesn't just choose sport to get involved with. It doesn't just choose, you know, whatever other area that you can think of, you know, farms or whatever. It's literally, it permeates everywhere.
Simnikiwe Qabanisa, thanks very much for talking to us this afternoon. Sports writer, and a very good one, despite what he said. And he was at the same school that I attended. I hope he had a happier time there.